All right. Hey, good morning, everybody. Continue to get donuts and coffee the entire time. It won't hurt my feelings or distract me or anything. I just ignore people in general. So, yeah, you know, it's like, why am I've got kids, you know?
Who are you ignoring?
Wait a second. But these are the best donuts in Andrews, North Carolina. They're delicious. Yeah. They're healthy. They're made out of a non-GMO vegetable protein, and they're non-gluten organic, antioxidant rich. That's right. They cut out the calories. The calories are right there in the middle. Yeah, they're good. It's not sugar. They're not made with sugar. They're sugar free. It's actually an evaporated cane juice. They're bite size. Ooh, that's a big bite. So I did see evaporated cane juice as an ingredient once, and I thought, is this just a way of trying to trick somebody? Because isn't that what sugar is? It's a byproduct of sugar. See, it's not sugar. It's a byproduct of making sugar. So it can't be, because all the bad stuff's in sugar. Right? All right. So we're going to talk about a Christian worldview. And as you guys know, the Christian worldview is under attack in our culture today. Pretty easy to understand that, right? And it's supposed to be this way. Because this is what Jesus said was going to happen, right? So we shouldn't be surprised at it. But lately, it has gotten more and more blatant. Like on June 7th, which was my birthday, and I didn't get a phone call from any of you. And I'm not upset. I'm just sad. And yeah, that was my fault. I didn't have your number saved, and so I didn't answer it. But thanks. I appreciate it. Okay, that's I believe you. So on June 7th, it was, I don't know if you guys remember, this was when a guy named Russell Vaught was being considered on whether or not he would be the deputy budget director of the White House. And so they had to have a hearing of this, of course, and Bernie Sanders just went off on this guy. Because what had happened is Russell Vaught had graduated from Wheaton College, which is an evangelical school in Illinois, and he had written a blog post defending a move that Wheaton had done on firing a professor who openly acknowledged that you could be saved through Islam, all right? Through practicing Islam. So a Christian school giving this much to saying that salvation could come through Islam, I mean, big deal. So they fired him. Well, Russell Vaught wrote an article about it, and then Bernie Sanders just attacked him for this. Now, keep in mind that this is for the deputy director of the budget for the White House, right? So should it really matter to Bernie Sanders what his religious beliefs are? I don't think so, especially in light of the fact that we belong to a country that affirms people's right to believe whatever they want, to teach, believe, assemble, worship, all of that, right? Well, so it came down to the gospel, because Bernie Sanders said, well, do you believe? Because he then made it was about defending Wheaton, which then became about defending Islam. And so he then said, do you believe that there are this many people in the world who practice Islam, that they're condemned by God? And Russell Vaught did a great job. He said, as a Christian, I believe salvation comes through Jesus Christ, faith alone, that everyone was created in God's image, worthy of respect and, you know, worthy of respect and honor because they're created in God's image. But they do. They stand condemned before God unless they believe and receive and believe the gospel. I mean, we would agree with that. And in fact, he's articulating what has been the traditional Christian understanding of salvation. And then Bernie Sanders just blew up, just kept getting so mad at him. And he would say something, he'd say, as a Christian, I believe this. And he'd go back and forth. He says, well, as a Christian. And then finally, Bernie Sanders said, I know you're a Christian, but are you telling me this and this and this? And he said, yeah. And then he said, he told the chairman, said, you can do whatever you want, but I'm not gonna affirm him because I can't believe that no one who believes that this many Americans are condemned before God should hold any public office. And you think, whoa. I mean, that's huge. So we're saying that Russell Vaught is being attacked. I mean, on C-SPAN, obviously it's not super public because nobody watches C-SPAN, but I mean, he's being attacked because he's holding up the Christian faith. But then think about where Bernie Sanders is coming from. Look at the ignorance that this shows from Bernie Sanders, because he's saying he's upset because Christianity is an exclusive religion that believes that everyone who doesn't come to God through that religion are condemned. Well, he comes from a Jewish background, right? Anybody see some sort of contradiction there? Isn't that confusing? Because his family, Jewish folks, who believe that, yeah, everyone who doesn't come to faith through Yahweh, right, through the Old Testament God, that they are condemned before God. And so they're even more exclusive, right? But then we think Islam, he's defending Islam, who also believes that if you're not Muslim, that you, not only are you not going to have salvation, but if you don't accept that now, that you should go ahead and be killed because you're an infidel. Isn't that crazy that we're seeing this? I mean, it's everything. You can believe everything you want as long as it's not Christianity. That's what's happening in our culture today. And so this is what our students, this is the cultural climate that our students are going into. Right, so how do we help them prepare for this? Okay, so one, we need to let them be ready to fight, right? By the way, all these slides from all of the breakout sessions are on the SWO app, or you can download them off of the webpage. Isn't that great? So you don't have to take notes. Who wants to take notes anyway? Boring. Yeah, I do the same thing. Helps me pay attention. And stay awake, because sometimes the people who are talking before 8 in the morning are boring. So, you know. Anyway, so we need to be ready to fight, because what's happening right now, even in the academic climate, right, even for academics, they're saying that everyone can believe whatever they want to believe. Whatever you want to believe, you're allowed to believe that. And that if someone tells you you can't believe that, they're judging you. They're discriminating against you. Right? So this makes it very hard to be a Christian academically in our culture, because the academic world is saying that everyone has a right to believe everything they want to, and you can't judge against them. If you say they're wrong, you're the one being the one discriminating. And what's happening is that and we're going to talk about this a little bit about truth, is we've relativized truth in our culture, that whatever you want the truth to be for you is true, right? Now, I first started thinking this way, or reacting against this, it was in 1998 when a guy named Paul Copan wrote a book called True for You, But Not for Me. Paul Copan's then and now, I think, is still a professor at PBA, at Palm Beach Atlantic University. And he's talking through this issue of what truth is and relativizing truth. And he's saying that it's just impossible. It's inconsistent to say that everything can be true for everyone, because there's going to be conflict. And then how do you resolve that? Right. So we need to help educate our students on the nature of truth, right? And they need a re-education as far as an understanding of the culture that they're going into. This is what the culture is going to believe, because we need to prepare them, right? That we need to prepare them for the academic culture that they're going into. I say that because if it's true that the academic culture that our students are going into is hostile to Christianity, then every one of our students needs to be on their guard, ready for it. Even when it seems like an innocuous class that they might go into. Like, for instance, we have a lot of students who in North Carolina who will go to Chapel Hill, UNC Chapel Hill, Go Heels, Go America. And you have to make a decision, Ben. Heels? Come on. Just stick with them. Stick with Carolina. Come on, Greg. What, State? Duke? The Wolfpack, yeah. See? I told you. Anyway, it doesn't matter. North Carolina, as you know, is polarized when it comes to basketball, much like, you know, other states, like especially if you live in Alabama. Make you see, you got it, Alabama, man. Nobody believes that. Anyway, Some people are just sad and deluded. We need a re-education, people. Anyway, what were we talking about? Oh, people go to North Carolina Chapel Hill, and they'll say, I'm a Christian. You know, I just went to a youth group. I love the Bible. I'm going to take this New Testament class offered by this guy named Bart Ehrman. He seems really smart. He's written a bunch of books. He wrote all the books for the class. This is probably going to be awesome. I'm going to come out of this class a better Christian. Well, Bart Ehrman, who ironically was educated at Wheaton, and then he went to a couple other schools. So he's got a PhD in the New Testament, and he spends his whole life telling people that the New Testament's not true, God's not real. What? But I just signed up for this New Testament class because I love Jesus. I'm sure it was going to be awesome, right? So we're hearing that. You know, students will come back here. In fact, I had a conversation with one of our summer staff who went to NC State, who, same thing, went to this New Testament class and came out thinking, oh, the New Testament's completely unreliable. Why would we trust this for any type of truth, you know, much less salvation? I mean, it's crazy. So we need to help our students understand the cultural climate that they're going into that's hostile against Christianity. And we also need to be teaching our students to think critically. I'm going to talk about this some tomorrow the pervasiveness, is that a word? The ubiquity of social media that students are starting to, that are thinking, they aren't thinking critically anymore. They're losing their attention span. And so we need to help re-educate our kids to just be able to think well. Right? Be able to think through, to be able to process things, and we need to get them to ask the tough questions to themselves right now. You're in high school is the best time to introduce your students to all of the difficult questions that they're going to face against Christianity. Because it's in a situation where they've got support from the outside and they can actually process these questions. Right, they need to be able to process them. We need to be asking students stuff like, you know, how is it that you can have an all-loving, all-powerful, all-good God exist and evil still exists in the world? How does that happen? Because that's the biggest question that students are going to face when they go to college. You're telling me, how can there be a God? Look at all these bad things that are happening. Right? They need to ask those questions now. They need to get answers for those questions now. Because if they don't have answers for those questions now, when a non-believer who's read one book, right, or watched a couple YouTube videos is going to come at them, they're going to have no way to answer those questions. Right? We also need to get them to ask the question why. Over and over, just ask the question why. Start to think critically. Ask the question why. Why is this happening? Why does this happen? You know, so that they can be processing these things now. But then also, they need to deal with why. This is getting a little too much for before 8 in the morning. Why is it that human beings always are asking the question why? We innately ask the question why when we look at the outside world. Why is that? Why do we do that? Well, we do that because somewhere inside us, we assume that there's order in the world that we live in. Well, that doesn't make sense. Why would there be order in the world we live in unless there was someone who divinely ordered it? Right? Have you think about that? The fact that we're asking, why are all these things happening in the world? We're assuming that there's a purpose behind it. But if everything that exists is just random events plus time plus chance, then there shouldn't be order. We should say, yeah, well, this shouldn't make sense. So why are you hung up on it? Because innately, inside us, we need to know, right? Because we're human beings, created in the image of God. We assume that there's order in the universe. We assume that we can ask the question why and there will be an answer for it. All right, so let's move on. There's three things I want to talk about. I think if we can help students understand these three things, the Christian view of truth, creation, and eternity, we understand these three things, everything else will fall into place. So we can help build a firm foundation for our students. First, and this is what we've already been talking about a little bit with truth, that our students need to understand that truth exists. I know. For most of us, we think, of course truth exists, right? Well, the problem is, in the academic climate that we're in right now, there is no such thing as truth, which is ironic because I'm making a truth statement by saying there's no such thing as truth. That's where we're going to see everything falls on its face when we come into this. Because what we're doing is we're living in a culture reaping the consequences of the postmodern movement going through the academic world. Because no one's really postmodern. They don't really know what they're supposed to call what we're thinking, the way that we're thinking right now, because we've already used modern and we've used postmodern. So what do you do after that? Anyway, so very confusing. So we don't really know what we're supposed to call what we're doing right now, but we're reaping the consequences of the postmodern movement. And so, and what's crazy is that If you go to a university and you take a class on logic, you're going to find out that logic is ordered by laws. And the first law of logic is the law of non-contradiction, right? That, or some people call it the law of identity, that A does not equal not A, that something can't be true and false at the same time in the same respect. Well, this is a big deal. This is math and logic are based on this, but for some reason we think that in every other area you can just decide what you want truth to be for you. And the reason for this is because of this reader response, as a reader response approach first to art and then to everything else, right? It becomes a reader response understanding of truth. Let me explain, because I know it's 8 o'clock, exactly 8 o'clock, and we're talking about postmodernism and reader response. So cool, welcome. And so what happened was, and this, it makes sense the way this would evolve, right? So if you think about art, when you look at a painting, nobody really thinks that, oh, this painting means something specific and concrete. When we think of art, we think, oh, this is just cool, and whatever your emotional response is, what they're trying to elicit from you, right? So then that turns into you decide what the meaning of a painting is or for a poem is, because you don't really, it's not clear exactly what the painter or what the poet was trying to convey, so you make up your own meaning. Well, in reality, the closer that you get in the response you have to what the poet or the painter meant when they painted it, then the better you are at understanding that form of art, right? So, I mean, there is a standard. They're trying to communicate something in that. But then it moves on, because then it goes into all different types of literature, right? It doesn't matter, because this is what happened. It was in the 60s, pretty much in the 60s in Europe, these philosophers were trying to think through the nature of truth, and they decided that truth is whatever you want it to be. In fact, it doesn't matter what words are used. What matters is your response to it. Words, is that's just play. Whatever your response to that is, that's where the meaning comes from. All right? Now, we don't really live this way. Right? Nobody really lives this way. We can live this way. We can look at art this way, but we don't look at any other form of communication like this. Right? Anytime you try to convey something, for communication to take place, takes place to the extent that what the person who's listening, their idea matches the idea that the author is trying to communicate. Does that make sense? And so in the late 60s, a guy named Roland Barthes started this movement talking about the author, the death of the author, that there is no author anymore. What the author said doesn't mean anything. All that matters is what you believe. So he talks about the death of the author, and is this idea of reader response theory of understanding, theory of knowledge. But the problem with that is that you can't adequately convey that without assuming authorial intent. Does that make sense? Even to try to explain to you that your opinion is the only thing that matters, I'm trying to convey something to you. Does that make sense? You guys see what I'm talking about? Like, this is where it breaks down completely. Because something either has to be true in its essence, or it's not true. There's no middle ground. That even if you hold to this reader response understanding of truth, the only way you can explain the reader response understanding of truth is if someone explains it to you and you're accurately understanding what they're saying. The problem with this is that it's seeped into the church, because we now look at the Bible in a reader response understanding of knowledge, and we forget about authorial intent. Now, we wouldn't say this on purpose. We would never say it doesn't matter what God means when he said this, but we go through it backwards. How many times have you been in a Bible study and you read a passage of Scripture and the first question is, what does this mean to you? Right? See the problem there? Now, I know that we're not intentionally trying to undermine God's authority. What we're really saying is, how do you individually respond to this? That's what we're really saying, but those aren't the words we use. The words we use is, what does this mean to you? As if we're the ones who determines the meaning of Scripture. Right? We don't determine the meaning of Scripture. In fact, good, faithful preaching, the goal is to unearth God's intent in writing this to that person at that time, and then take that principle and apply it to us today. Right? The most faithful preaching is understanding the divine author's intent in conveying information, right? In what is they're trying to convey, and then applying that. Now, will we all apply that differently? Yes, but are we the ones who determine the meaning of a passage? No, we're not, right? So we need to help people understand that. Then also, when we think about Christianity as a whole, we believe that Christianity is true. Now, there's some things on here that don't make much sense at all, except for me. But like, it's just helped me to say things, right? So right there, it says there's no absolutes, absolutely none, right? You know, you can't say there's no such thing as an absolute truth, but it's because you're making an absolute statement about truth in so doing, right? And then I wrote up here presuppositionalism, which is just a form of apologetics, which states that the only way to make sense of the world in which we live in is if you presuppose the truths of Christian faith, right? If you presuppose the truths of Christianity, it's the only way to make sense in this world. Well, people who believe and teach presuppositionalism will say that the reason why you believe in Christianity is because of the impossibility of the contrary. That there is nothing else that will make sense in this world. And we need to help students think through that. We need to help students understand that if you're looking at a worldview, right, or a belief system, that they are, a belief system needs to, if it's going to be consistent, it needs to be internally consistent, means without contradiction, and externally consistent, apply that it makes sense of the world in which we live in. And Christianity is the only worldview that will do this. Christianity is the only worldview that is internally consistent in and of itself and externally consistent. If we can help students understand that, then we're giving them a solid foundation to face attacks and criticism, right? How much confidence do we have if we say the only worldview that makes sense of the world in which we live in is Christianity? What a good foundation. Because then when people attack and criticize, then they can say, okay, I've got a proper context in which I can answer this, right? I know that whatever this is doing is not saying that Christianity is not true, right? But this involves a lot of work on our part. This involves a lot of work on our part in equipping and preparing our students for the next phase of their life. That they need, and then we need to understand the difference between when we're talking about truth, what subjectivity and what objectivity is. Most students have no clue of these categories because I make jokes about it all the time and they don't pick up on it. But that there are things that are open to your preference, right? It's that, you know, because if they say, well, if everything is exclusive, right? What if I like this and they like that? Well, that's different. That's not a truth claim. That's just preference. And then we need to understand, again, that the Bible is the standard, the filter by which the Bible is true in everything that it affirms. But we need to help students understand also that doesn't mean that the Bible gives all truth about everything. The truth is not a math book, right? There's truth that exists outside of the Bible, but the Bible is true in everything that it affirms, right? And then help them understand that we believe in the exclusivity of Jesus. And this is the most dangerous thing in our culture to believe. When you say that you believe that salvation comes exclusively by faith in Jesus, this puts you on the outs, right? As far as our culture goes, because our culture wants to say everything, you can believe everything, and we can affirm that you should believe everything. Whereas as Christians, we do need to have a proper understanding of tolerance, but a proper understanding of tolerance is acknowledging people that they have the right to believe what they want to believe. It's not saying that they have, it's not adding also that it's also true, right? And we need to understand that every religion, every belief system, every worldview makes exclusive truth claims. Because the biggest objection to Christianity that people say is they're like, oh, but it's so exclusive. Well, yeah. Anytime you make a statement of truth, it's exclusive. It's excluding everything that contradicts it. And they'll say, well, you know, I want to believe in Buddhism or Hinduism because they believe that everybody is right, that every God is true and every God is right. Well, no, they don't. I mean, you can't bring Christianity underneath Hinduism or Buddhism, even though in Hinduism there's multiple thousands of gods, and they can say, oh yeah, well, your God just comes underneath that, just one of those gods. So you can't do that, because Christianity says that Jesus is the only way. So it's they're mutually exclusive, and we need to realize that. Like, it's not a mean thing, it's not a bad thing to say that your belief system is exclusive. That's the nature of belief. Anytime you're believing something, you're disbelieving everything that contradicts it. Every statement a fact, is a truth claim, and is exclusive. And that's not a bad thing. You know, people say that's because people will attack Christianity because, oh, you're exclusive. Yeah, everyone is. And we need to help students understand that, just so we can diffuse the arguments that they're going to get into. The next thing, truth, there's truth, and then the next thing is creation. This is such a big deal because, again, this is huge right now in our culture, that creation is under attack. And the difficult thing is that everyone has to have an answer for the existence of the material world, right? If you're going to be a thinking, grown-up person, you have to have an answer for why the material world exists. Why this instead of nothing? You have to have an answer for that. And it's crazy because Christians are the ones who have done the most thinking and writing on this, right? Because we have the doctrine of creation, where we believe that there's an immaterial, all-powerful creator God who's eternal, who created the material world in which we live in. Now, for a really long time in human history, they believed that the universe existed forever, that it was an eternal universe. But when science and philosophy kind of collided in the mid-20th century, they realized, wait a second, there had to be a beginning to the universe. There had to be a beginning. And so for Christians, this is so great because Christians have the best answer for the beginning of the universe, because this isn't just one question, right? This is a question about everything. Everything literally begins at creation. And for a believer, we understand that because we believe that God created the universe and that God created human beings as a special creation of God, then from this follows our understanding of identity and meaning and purpose and value, that we have a foundation for identity, for you personally as a human being, you have an identity as a special creation from God. That means that your life has meaning and value, and that means that there is a purpose for your life, and that you are supposed to live in a certain way underneath the standard of morality of which you were created for. The non-believer doesn't have answers for those things, right? Do you guys, do you see what a big deal this is? For a non-believer, they're going to think consistently following an evolutionary mindset of naturalistic evolution is that they don't have any other value than any other life form. Everything is just a product of evolution, and they don't have a way of differentiating between the value of one being and the value of another being. There's no good way of differentiating. There's no standard of how we're supposed to live with each other. There's no standard. But everybody lives to that standard, right? That's what we've seen over and over, is that people still are holding each other to account morally without a standard of it, right? And that all of these things, we would say, they all these have fallen underneath the umbrella of Christianity and being created in the image of God. The non-believer doesn't have a good answer for those. And it's crazy because if you think about, like, if you look in our culture today, try to look at the top, the smartest people that the world has to offer, who are offering other examples of how the universe came into being, it's terrible. It's laughable. Like, you think, we know that there's a guy named Thomas Nagel. He's a, philosopher. Talked about how we know that, and it's crazy. He said, we know that the traditional naturalistic Darwinian evolutionary model is incorrect. He wrote this is about, I guess it's probably 5 years ago. And it was crazy. People were like, what? Are you kidding me? And he said, but we don't know any other alternative. We know that Christianity is not true, but we don't know what else is. You know, because he's like, well, he's just throwing Christianity in the bus, right? And then you look at Richard Dawkins. Richard Dawkins, one of the smartest, coolest evolutionists out there, and the closest thing he's come to talking about the creation of intelligent beings on Earth is aliens, right? Like, that's his kind of go-to answer. Some other aliens that evolved from some sort of Darwinian process seeded intelligent life onto this planet. Great. Thanks, Richard. But we still don't have an answer for origin, right? We still need to think, okay, where did the aliens come from, right? And he's actually changing the parameters of what it means to be a naturalist, because up until he said that, we would assume that aliens are supernatural, right? Above nature, right? He's just expanding. Well, nature's actually way bigger and better than that, right? Okay, cool. Lawrence Krauss, he's the director of an organization called the Origins Foundation. He's a professor at the University of Arizona. He wrote a book called A Universe Out of Nothing, where he has just decided to change the definition of what nothing is. Because he says the universe came from nothing. And in the past, we would think of that as like a void or empty space, like what the Bible talks about. But he says our understanding of nothing now is that it is a virtual brew. It is a bubbling brew of virtual particles popping in and out of existence on a time scale so short that you can't see them. Right. Virtual particles popping in and out of an existence on a time scale so short you can't see them. And he says, the one thing we've learned about that kind of nothing is that kind of nothing is unstable. Right? Isn't that, I mean, that's helpful, right? So the universe came into existence because of these virtual particles that were popping in and out of existence on a time scale so short no one could see them. And he says, you know, because you can talk about nothing as if it's something, then perhaps it is something that can do something and maybe everything. I mean, that sounds crazy, right? You can't just change the definition of nothing so that nothing can create everything. And I don't understand how people are like, oh, yeah, that does make sense. That's good. Universe out of nothing, nothing created everything. Right? Because you guys know that nothing means no thing, right? And that in all of our observable history, things can't create themselves, right? Because they're not there to create themselves. But for some reason, we can skip over that and say, but perhaps the universe did that, right? I mean, this is crazy. And this is the best that the academic world has to offer. I mean, this is a big deal. And what we need to understand is that the most honest answer that a non-believer can give on the creation of the world is, I don't know. And we need to challenge students with the fact that that's not good enough as an answer for everything, right? Because so many people will point towards naturalistic evolution. Well, naturalistic evolution can't answer the question of origin. It never has, it never will, it's never intended to. If you read The Origin of the Species, it's in The Descent of Man. The Descent of Man, where Charles Darwin talks about, he says, at the beginning there had to be a creator. There had to be a creator. He says, so in that way you must have to call me a deist. Or no, you must have to call me a theist. Right? So Charles Darwin himself called himself a theist. Right. Why? Well, because he knew the evolution, his model of evolution started with stuff that evolved. It didn't start with nothing. This is a big deal. And the last thing is eternity. We need to help our students understand that we're created for eternity. Right? And because we are finite human beings trying to understand an infinite God, that sometimes it's still going to be a mystery, right? Rightfully so. We are never going to fully understand God, who he is, because we will always be finite. He will always be infinite. We are going to be eternal beings. We won't have an end, but he never had a beginning, right? So we're not going to fully understand it. And this is the reason why we're here. The reason why we're here is to help people, to usher people into eternity. And that comes by salvation through faith in Jesus Christ. And we need to help, we help them understand that everybody's living for this eternity. Everyone's living for eternity. In Ecclesiastes 3, God says that he has written eternity on the hearts of everyone, right? We all have eternity written on our hearts. And that every one of us, and this is where the rubber meets the road, because we can't just become, you know, we can't just talk about Christianity without living it out with people. Everyone that we come in contact with on a daily basis is an eternal soul created for relationship with God, right? That's a big deal. And that we don't just need to be trying to defend ourselves so that we can walk through life unharmed. We need to be sharing the gospel with people, and that every person that we see needs the gospel. And so I'm just going to read one quote from C.S. Lewis, and then we'll be finished. Because C.S. Lewis, you have to quote him and everything. It makes you sound smarter. But we know a lot of stuff C.S. Lewis said we don't agree with because he was Anglican. But listen to this quote. This is from The Weight of Glory. And I think this is a beautiful quote because it helps us understand that every one of us are eternal beings and every one of us needs the gospel. He says this: "It is a serious thing to live in a society of possible gods and goddesses, to remember that the dullest, most uninteresting person you can talk to may one day be a creature which, if you saw it now, you would be strongly tempted to worship, or else a horror and a corruption such as you now meet, if at all, only in a nightmare. All day long, we are in some degree helping each other toward one or the other of these destinations. It is in light of these overwhelming possibilities, it is with the awe and the circumspection proper to them, that we should conduct all our dealings with one another, all friendships, all loves, all play, all politics. There are no ordinary people. You have never talked to a mere mortal. Nations, cultures, arts, civilizations, these are mortal. And our life and their life to ours is like the life of the gnat, but it is immortals with whom we joke with, work with, marry, snub, exploit, immortal horrors or everlasting splendors." What a good picture to realize that every person that you come in contact with is either going to be spending an eternity separated from God or an eternity growing closer and more like God for eternity. And that this is the fate of every person we are coming in contact with. So it should give us the urgency to share the gospel with them, right? So let me pray for us and we'll be finished. Gracious Lord, I do pray that you will be with us today. Help us to love you more. I pray that you will be with the relationships that we have with these students, that we'll be able to encourage them and challenge them and teach them. Help us to take ownership of the shaping of these students' worldviews so that we can help protect them and equip them to be lights of your gospel in the next stage of their life. We love you and praise you in the name of Jesus. Amen.